Any questions, comments? You know. And it's hard for me to see, too, because of the light, so if folks can help. Oh, God, why that question got to come? I'm going to try to deal with this as best I can, right? Because I was telling Dan, I was like, man, I don't even know how to put it. Anyhow, let me try to answer it like this. You can't copyright Black Panther Party, you know? It's open for anybody, you know? But sometimes when you from the Black Panther Party and you have sacrificed, you have been hurt by it, you have enjoyed even the great things that you've experienced in it, but you know that there's still comrades in prison, you remember those who died, you want anybody who takes that name on to carry on a certain spirit and maybe a certain style. It was very important for us to be connected with our community. It was very important to do community work. Power to the People guided us. We was also creating new relationships as best we could, right? Around in terms of the male and female. Huey even challenged us to look at how we are homophobic, right? We was encouraged to develop relationships with other oppressed communities, from workers to Native Americans to Palestinians to whoever, right? Sometimes when that don't happen, it can be hurting. But then you say, okay, you can't control what other people do. You can only hope that somewhere along the line that, like we were encouraged to reflect and be critical of what we do, you hope that they will be. Which is what I hope the new Black Panther Party does. I cannot say honestly that I am pleased, right? A lot of them are young, and a lot of who I have talked to actually knew very little about the Black Panther Party, but I appreciate their commitment to what they think is the idea. I just wish that they would be more critical. Ideally, I would want to have a really serious discussion with them in a different setting. Like if they was here and it was us, me and them, in this platform, I would feel very uncomfortable with doing it. But if it was in like a black format, black community, or people of color, because there's some things that I think we need to talk about, that I would feel freer so that others wouldn't look at it as entertainment, you know, two niggas fighting, you know. So I don't know, it's hard for me to see the order, so folks who know the order too can help me, because the lights I can't really see. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was strong back then, right? It was strong back then, but I think the things that helped was community within organizations and stuff. I mean, one, the thing with us is that we knew that there was something, some kind of thing the government was doing, from on a local level to the FBI. But even with that, being young and inexperienced, that stuff still tended to catch us off guard. So that when it happened, we were still surprised because of the sophistication and the pervasiveness of it. Today, I think that folks in the movement today know a lot more about COINTELPRO type things and what the government's doing, Patriot Act. And I also think that folks today got more internal skills in the sense of some of the things that break us down within movements, like how, you know, dealing with sexism, dealing with even ageism, dealing with the imbalances in people's experiences, and sometimes, or even dealing with the fact that this young person has just gone through puberty and is finding themselves in relationships at the same time that they're part of the Momia Coalition, you know, and nobody takes into consideration that they are this human being too, as well as this activist. Because what the FBI does in groups like that is they look for the weaknesses, right? Anything they can expose, they will, right? One of the things that's hard for them to expose that was damaging back then is people's sexualities, right? Our movements today are very sexually diverse, and it's out there, up front. You know, back then, you know, like a James, I think it was James Farmer, who was queer. You know, they could tell him, and they could tell Martin Luther King, like, yo, James Farmer, you know, you got to stop working with James Farmer because you know he's a little funny, and we can show you pictures, right? Today, our movements are much more diverse and open, so that ain't necessarily gonna work, right? But also with a Martin Luther King, if they know that, you know, you've been flirting a little bit, you know, and your wife don't know it, we might put a little pressure on you, you know. But what helps to deal with that is for us to look at our internal stuff, our internal organizational lives and even our personal lives, to see what strengthens that, what creates community, what helps us to, like, know each other. Because one thing, I do not think an agent can survive, like an agent who infiltrates, can survive a group that is really beginning to love each other within the group, really beginning to care, you know? Because you got to get to know folks. You're going to get to know not only their folks, you're going to get to know their family. And sometimes you got somebody that's like, their family, you never find out about their family. They say their family lives on the other side of the country and this and that and some other things. I would be more concerned with that person, right? Because usually, you know, an agent ain't going to let you know too much about their background that can be possibly checked on. But it also means that our strength is what we do internally, you know. There's a lot on that, but that's like one of my things is like, we need to love. Martin Luther King says it's one of the most powerful forces in the universe, and I really believe it, that we just don't know how to work it to make it free us. And I just don't think infiltration can deal with it, you know, because they deal with people who got hang-ups and baggage that they won't deal with. We all got hang-ups and baggage, but when you don't deal with it, then the FBI and them know exactly what to do. Look at what they did in terms of splitting the Panthers. You'll see that they played not on the politics, but on people's personal shit. You know, there's a lot with it.
Sadolinsky writes in Rules for Radicals about working within the system to change the system. I'd like to know what your thoughts are as a more activist today on those concepts versus what you experience.
I think that fundamentally I am still like, you can't bring about change from within, right? It's gotta happen from people. But now you know you're not clapping too soon. But there's a thing about civil society, right? Which goes with that thing about reform. I do think that we gotta learn how to work reform better. But I think that we just do so bad with it. Like people, we will, just like with the elections, for example. I'm in Chiapas. I don't want to hear about Kerry and Bush. Don't ask me again if I'm going to vote for Kerry. It's about an empire, right? An empire that goes on regardless of who's in that puppet role, right? But for me, I know that people are concerned with, if Kerry is in there, maybe it won't be so rough. We'll be able to organize this and that. We've been saying that stuff every election. What my message was to people was like, especially activists, which really surprised me that they got so caught up into this election, do your community work that you say you want to do, right? And let's think about putting politicians and other lawmakers and law writers in a position where it's not asking them or begging them for anything, but making them do. but doing it with in mind that it's about people who make this change happen outside, that anything inside should only be about helping us to bring this thing down or bring it to a standstill. You know, if we don't do that, people just feed into this thing and they got another reason to believe that, oh, if we can change this law or we can get this black senator, you know, or maybe Condoleezza Rice. Come on, the system been here for how long? You don't change this from within. And what is another interesting thing, just brief from the Zapatistas. Zapatistas say it's not about changing the world. It's about creating a new world, right? So what they're saying is they ain't trying to change Mexican system. They're about creating a new world, right? And there's this old anarchist cartoon that I really, was one of my favorite, and what it said was, it's basically saying we're not about to overthrow the government. You know, we're about organizing so that the government or the system just gets lost in the shuffle, right? Because we make up this system. We make this thing work. So what happens when we begin to facets here, facets there, communities here, communities there, workplaces here, workplaces there, begin to just pull out? You know, Zapatistas are like, we're not going to play the script. We're not going to play the game. We're pulling out. And if the system fall from that, so be it. You know, I think it's more in there, but I think we get too caught up into like putting all our marbles into the elections and reforms and changing laws. Do we want gay marriage and stuff like that? You know, why should the courts even decide it? You want to get married, you know, hook up with a little social ceremony, do your thing. You know, I know you want some benefits and stuff, but hey, come on. We got to create new shit.
Looking at back in the 20th century, this is a question that's kind of nagging me, is especially regarding autonomous social movements. Is the way the Bolsheviks derailed the Russian Revolution, and the way the Spanish Revolution was derailed by the authoritarian left, and the 68 and Paris, same thing. And it almost seems like the authoritarian left is way more of a problem than something like the FBI, which is a top-down pyramid, and they can't think outside of that, and they're still looking for the anarchist leaders, for the past 100 years. And how do you deal with the business as usual liberals, again with the election, take so much steam out of autonomous movements and sort of. And the way we kind of go out of our way to appease them, have you given much thought to how you stave off the inevitable authoritarian counter-revolution from the left?
I think that I learned a lot about authoritarianism in prison too, and that was like reading a lot of stuff. The critical theory folks. But what it taught me was that we all got a lot of authoritarianism in us, whether we call ourselves anarchists or Democrats or communists. I'm more interested in folks realizing how much we carry that stuff within us, and that if we can connect trying to work that stuff out of us during the course of this work that we want to do, we might find that we make a lot more progress. So, for example, if I'm working with a group, I am more concerned with how people might put me on a pedestal, because Ashanti, former Panther, BLA, shit, all them years in prison. I'm more concerned with developing an equal relationship with this person than on that level than to start getting that picture to be so grand that the next thing I know, I'll be debating some other organization or some other philosopher somewhere on these points of abstract bullshit instead of just the concrete, what's going on right here, right now, with us, what's going on, So, and it's just like, like this here. I mean, I'm all even concerned with, it's a platform, right? The whole setup, I'm here talking, y'all here. And y'all supposed to listen to me. But I know the real work is when this can become more face-to-face, ground level on the different areas of our lives, you know, so we can begin to break down the things that, you know, that's in us. And I think that it's a shame that even to this day, it's a big struggle to recognize how much this empire is in us. You know, the cop in the head, you know, which is why I like that one button that says, kill the cop in your head, you know.
Before you came here, I'm pretty sure you heard about the last speaker, and that was a risk that the community, my community, and people in the community took to hopefully spark some change. But the reason that he was thought of, that people decided, one person that really pretty pushed for him to come in, was because she saw that there was a community that was complacent, too comfortable in their situation on this campus. Just, that's in general. There's a lot of people out there like that. But my question is, without exposing all the dirty laundry that we know we have because we aren't in a family setting, we can't talk about that like that, what would you say would be the next step? Because we're still facing opposition, because he's here and gone. We're still facing opposition. But how do you say that we make sure that we can mobilize the community? Because you can see here that we got a couple black people in the corner, got some here, got some there. You know, and we'll never come together in my mind at the state we are right now. But what would you suggest that the next step for us to come together and be able to smile at each other in the hallway, even though we're like, oh, no, I don't feel good, they don't feel good. And they're black too. You know what I mean? So what would you say would be the next step for us, even if we feel that, you know, we try to take a risk, we try to promote change, we try to promote discussion and dialogue and things like that? What else are we going to do?
The Zapatistas do this thing called encuentros, which is roughly a translation to encounter. But it means more than just an encounter. It definitely means creating a space where people who may not necessarily talk know that there's issues, but this in this space, they know that they're coming together to really talk, right? Even if it's difficult and they know the tempers is going to flare, right? And this is no different from when the Zapatistas is doing consensus for 2 and 3 days straight. Tempers flare. We know as black folks, we know we got some issues to deal with. We are being attacked in a way that is devastating us, which makes me feel like if we don't pull it together soon, we going down for the final count. We got to pull it together. So that means that those people who've been out on Front Street from different organizations, different leaders, who have different levels and forms of respect, we need to sit down. We need to say, listen, we need to sit down and maybe lay down some ground rules, right? And let's talk. Let's put it on the table, you know, which is what I want to do, right? And I'm sure it's the same, like even in Brooklyn and New York in general, I want to sit down with folks in the black community who I've just given up on because I know we got some beef, you know. But I'm like, with what's happening to us, the gentrification, the militarization of the police in our communities, the prison industrial complex, all that other stuff, the drugs, all this other stuff, we can't afford to like not sit down and be concerned with whose feelings is going to be hurt, you know, who feels like their little fiefdom is going to be threatened. Let's have it. Let's have it. You know, I think that's what we got to do. I think other folks are going to do that too, because I even wish, like, even as an anarchist, right, there's so many different varieties, right, who potentially could do so much stuff, but are so caught up into, like, you know, proving that their version is the correct one and this other one is bullshit. What the fuck? You know? I mean, we're facing too much. Too much. And if it's difficult, let's go into the difficulty. You know? That's a part of it. If ground rules need to be laid down, let's set the ground rules and start to move from there. If whoever can come out of there with a like mind that we got a place to start with some concrete work, you know, and with some respect, you know, then let's start there. It's not like everybody's going to come out that room on the same page, but we got to start somewhere because it's bad. And we are our only saviors. We really are.
When you first joined the Governing Party and the process you went through getting to the party and reflecting that it was hierarchical in a certain way, leadership and the process, but also that it's a very educational process for you,
mm-hmm.
and that a big part of it was discovering how people internalize aggression, and that still goes on for the press communities everywhere, but the people who are oppressed have to understand how they have internalized their own aggression and how to get out of that. So what are your reflections on having come to different ideas about organization at this point on how to bring about that type of education in a non-hierarchical way?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nothing really concrete other than I always talk about it, right? I would love for organizations, political organizations out here to just incorporate more of the insight from like radical psychologies, stuff like that, into what they do, right? So that they can at least be aware of why it's important to deal with the internalization of our oppressions. You know, folks in other liberation movements talk about decolonization. You know, we got to figure out how to do that in the course of our work here. Whether you white, whether you black, we are all victims of this colonization of our thinkings and our behaviors and what we do. You know, so of course it's going to be different for different people. We got to start, you know, so that we know that when there's sexism within the group, it's tied to this larger picture, directly tied. You know, when the way that we raise our kids, you know, the authoritarian hand in raising our kids, even when we think we're doing it for their best interest, you know. If you're raising your kids in a very authoritarian manner, you the parent, you want them to obey you, don't question you and stuff, you are setting them up, you know, to follow the leadership of the country. You know, Bush, others, you know. If it seems uncomfortable for you to, like, allow your kid to talk back to you, you know, then of course they're not going to talk back when it's time for them to rebel, to question and stuff. So there's many different levels we got to begin to look at what we do, you know. And it's going to be very controversial to a lot of people to say that on a psychological level we need to really look at stuff that we do to ourselves and each other. But it means too is that we are all wounded warriors, you know. So in these organizations too, we need to be mindful that we are all still wounded warriors. So how do we help each other in these groups to heal our particular wounds? You know, that person who was sexually abused, you know, that other person who was punished with that heavy hand that they only know how to punish others with a heavy hand, you know? So how do we deal with that stuff? Because that's the stuff of life. And I think that's the stuff that should be the foundation of how we work, is like the day-to-day stuff that helps us to live in community has got to be kind of the basis of what we do. How do we make this community healing, loving, caring? How does it give us the space to even take the risk to divulge some very painful stuff that has happened to us as a result of being in this madness? You know, there's a lot, and I think there's a lot of radical psychologies and other things out there that can help us.
Thank you.